Hello, this is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
And welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, number 142. Today we're going to be talking about the season 6 winter finale. So this is episode 10, Riders on the Storm. As usual, if you want to get into contact with us, you can find us at NATW Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That's also our Gmail account. Or you can find us on Tumblr at notanotherteenwolfpodcast.com. I'm Karen, once again joined by Natalie to talk about the winter finale.
Hi.
Hi. How are you feeling about this?
I don't know. Very confused.
Yeah, there's a lot to talk about and a lot of, like, really tiny things that, I mean, we usually pick apart the episodes pretty well, but little tiny things that I just keep freaking out over and I don't know. I'm sad, of course, because this is the final season, but, like, also ridiculously happy at the same time.
Mm.
You do not share my enthusiasm.
Well, I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know. As we said, we're going to get there. Like, I'm very confused as to where they're meant to go from here. Like, as to what the show... And as to why that they framed this... They framed this episode as a series finale...
Yeah.
But also, kind of, if it was a series finale, it's not enough, if you know what I mean. But we know it's not a series finale, but they fully framed it like one, as opposed to... I don't know, like, it did not end where I expected it to end. Like, it ended at the point I expected it to end at the end of the whole season.
That wouldn't have been enough for you?
The end might have, but this story probably wouldn't have. Like, the Ghost Rider story and the solution to the Ghost Rider story probably wouldn't have.
Yeah. I have some questions about that, too.
I just feel like that they tacked on an ending to this episode that was an episode designed for maybe the season finale, and there might be reasons for that. But, yeah, we'll go into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's jump into quotes first.
You go first.
I suppose I'll go first, yeah. So this is when Mr. Douglas is trying to attack Liam and Scott, and he's like, I'll have a true alpha by my side, and then a banshee, a were-coyote, and Styles comes busting through the door, and he's like, a Styles? And Mr. Douglas goes, a what? And then Styles just bashes him in the face with the bat. And it was weird. We got several entrances from Styles this episode because he kept meeting up with people.
Revealing to people.
Yeah. And it wasn't everybody all at once. So he got those, like, that cool moment that, like, Teen Wolf does a lot where the entrance and, you know, the camera pans to the person's face and it's all happy and everything. They got to do that several times with Styles in this episode, but this one might be my favorite one because it was just, oh, it was so great.
Yeah. It was, and that was the following bit was the bit that was in the trailer, that was a bad guy, right? I didn't misjudge that.
Yeah.
It was so funny. And I will just go out on a limb and say my favourite quote of the episode, well, my favourite sound that came out of someone's mouth during the episode is the weird little moan that Scott made when he saw Styles, basically, like his kind of involuntary... like, cry when he saw Styles.
I rewatched it again, and I thought maybe that was Styles, actually. Like, the camera was on Scott, but it didn't sound like Scott made that sound. It kind of sounded like Styles made it off camera.
I don't know. I kind of think it was Scott, but maybe it wasn't. Anyway.
Either way, it was adorable.
Yeah, was my favorite vocal noise of the episode. But my actual quote was also related to them in that when they are... I love the dynamic. I love that he came back and it wasn't like, oh my god, I remember you or anything. It was like, everyone knows what's up. Everyone's aware that, oh my god, he's been gone and I've forgotten him and now he's back. It's not like, oh yeah, that guy. It's all back, if you know what I mean. So they're back to normal dynamic. There's no kind of adjustment period of like, oh yeah, that's right. But they go out looking for the train track nonsense. And I think it's Scott that says it to Styles. I can't remember. I can't remember who says what, but I think it's Scott says, want to split up, and Styles says, never again. And then they go off together to do it, and it was just very cute and a lot.
And Scott says, thank God, right after that, and they just, like, walk off together, and it's, oh, it's so cute.
Yeah, it was... I felt very strongly about them in this episode, and I've, you know, I've been someone who in the past has not questioned them, but kind of been like, what's going on with these two? What is it that, you know, is it just a product of circumstance or whatever? This episode, and maybe it's, you know, the dynamic of having Dylan back and, like, you know, what the actors are putting into it, because it would have been quite an odd circumstance for the actors as well. Like, I would... really actually love to talk to Posey at some point about how he felt about making the season without Dylan. But yeah, I think that they did such a good job together in this episode, so it was really, really nice to have that back.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into it then, because right off the top of the episode, Styles comes back. And we first see him in the train station where the sheriff holds off the Ghost Riders so that he can get to his friends. And even this moment was just, it was really brief. And it was kind of sad that it had to be so brief, but the reunion between Styles and the sheriff was kind of emotional for me.
Like, there's a lot of things that happen in this episode very fast that I'm a little confused by. But yeah, basically, so they've both been, you know, they're both in the place where stuff is taken, they see each other, and the, you know, sheriff's like, we'll find each other again, you go, apparently, because this rift will only work for Styles, it won't bring everyone back.
Right.
Like, it's not like everyone can just go through the rift now that it's open, apparently, it only works for the person being remembered, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So that's why he's like, you go, you can get out.
And when Styles finally does go through the rift, he doesn't walk out to where Lydia is. He actually reappears where he was taken in his Jeep. And that moment of, like, the empty Jeep, it turns on. Then all of a sudden you just see his hands grip the wheel and then he, like, pops up. It was just, it was so Styles and it was so perfect and it was a little silly, but it was also, like, really triumphant. And I thought they did a really good job with that.
Yeah, no, so did I. And I wonder if that's, like, the whole coming out, like, thing, you know, where you're taken is normal, or if it's just if, you know, people haven't come back in this circumstance before, but... yeah, if he wasn't going to come through the portal into their arms, then yes, this was good.
And I think that is what happens when you return, because at the end when we see, like, all the deputies, they all pop up back into the sheriff's station.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And one of the lines that I really liked in this episode was during this scene between Malia and Lydia, when Malia just says, Styles isn't coming here. If he was, he would have, and he hasn't, so he's not. And it's just like Malia logic, and obviously, like, makes a lot of sense, because if Styles was going to be there, like, he was. And it was just a great line, another great delivery. Like, I know every episode we're like, but Shelley is so amazing, and I just had to say it again.
No, she was in this episode. She was really good. Like, in the train station when she's trying to wake the people up, where she's like, come on, people, let's go. All right, like, everything, like, her body language, just the way she looks in those, like, shorts and boots and stuff. This character is so whole to me, Malia, and I just love her and so much.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, like, she's really well written, but I think so much of that comes from Shelley herself, because a lot of that is in, like, little mannerisms that they don't necessarily tell the actors, you know, that's something that you kind of come up with yourself to, like, get yourself into that character. And, mm-hmm. and the way that she just moves and reacts to things is brilliant.
Mm. Yeah. She's really... Yes, yeah, she's really incredible at a character like this. So I'm keen to see what happens next with her, like in terms of if she kind of does any more work that is, that involves such an unusual personification, basically. Like, you know, that's something that's not just like, I'm acting like a normal girl in whatever way, that she, you know, gets something that's really... Yeah, unique again, because she clearly has the capacity for it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, she could always just go back to the soaps. Which she is, but...
I mean, it's really cool that, like, an actress with that background can, you know, go out for a show like this and then embody such an unusual role, you know, and not have any hang-ups about that, or, like, not... try to make it something different or whatever, like the fact that would be her background, and that she would then basically play a feral child is really, really interesting as well.
Yeah, she's super talented. Mm. Speaking of all those people that she sees, though, Mr. Douglas is merging the worlds. So the train station is coming into the real world where, you know, the pack exists. And so train tracks show up all over town. And, you know, this is where we first get, like, Styles coming in and saying, like, bad guy, right? I didn't misread that, which was really great. And speaking of that, actually, I wanted to say that Teen Wolf Without Styles is a good show. I still love it. And this season, even though he's only been in 3 episodes, has been a really solid season. And it hasn't felt like it was necessarily lacking anything. But him coming back makes this show feel so complete in a way that, like, we've lost plenty of characters over the years. But it's always been sort of easy to move on. I mean, yeah, like, I wish Isaac would come back, and I miss him, and, like, the way that Jackson interacted with people. Like, it's always nice to have them there. But I can move on, and I can, you know, continue with the story. I think the closest person that came to it feeling really weird was Allison, because she was such a huge part of the show to begin with. Mm. But Styles being there, the way that he interacts with everybody, what he brings, what Dylan brings to the show is so unique that, like, it felt so good to have him back for the winter finale.
Yeah, I don't think that it is a show designed to survive without him, and it sort of just incidentally ended up having to. So, yes, it was certainly kind of a level of settling back into what's normal and just things seeming a little easier and brighter and, I don't know, all of that kind of stuff, which is really, really portrayed in the episode as well, in the way that he kind of just, like, handles the situations that they come into. But... yeah, I kind of like that there's, like, this sort of comedy of errors, like a farce where, you know, he's running around the school, and then Scott and Liam are running around the hospital, and then the girls get to the school and he's not at the school anymore, and everyone's kind of, like, chasing each other around the town. I don't even know what to say about the merging of the worlds and the train tracks crossing over, because I don't understand it. Like, I am going to need someone from the show to sit me down and be like, this is what's happened and this is why, because I understand literally nothing about what's going on with the crossover of the way station world and the real world and what the train actually does. 0 things about this, I understand. Just so you know.
The train, I don't necessarily know what that does. We'll get into why the worlds are merging in a little bit.
I know why that, like, you know, we have that which comes up, you know, like, how. I know how. I just don't know why or, like, what it achieves.
Well, this allows Mr. Douglas to have the Ghost Riders permanently in the real world so he can have his army.
Okay. I guess. I'm still like, I'm like, okay, there's a train. I have no idea why. So I need that spelled out to me in some way because I'm very confused.
Yeah.
Like, I ultimately understand what happened at the end. I also just don't quite understand how it's a solution. We'll get into it. At the moment, Styles, he's back.
Yeah. He even hugs Liam, which, like, I just, you know, their relationship has always been just, like, banter and not much, you know, love between them. But, like, he even hugs Liam, and I really liked that moment.
Yeah, it was really cute. Styles hugs a lot of people and tells a lot of people he loves them in this episode.
Yeah.
I really wanted to tease on Twitter, like, wow, Styles tells someone really unexpected that he loves them in this episode and see how people reacted. I did not do that because
you're awful.
I don't want to die, but I really wanted to. Which is honestly an element I really liked. I really liked about the show that it's something to kind of talk about at the end with him and Scott saying goodbye. But I really like that, like, that's a, you know, the portrayal of, you know, them as young men. That they sort of, that he can say that openly and casually and stuff about all of the people that he cares about. So that's good. Yes, he hugs Liam. It's very cute. When he's crawling over to Scott with his arms out already, that's cuter though.
He's sorry. Like flailing. It was so adorable. But what I also like about his return is like there's, like you were saying, like they get their reunion, but they don't focus on it too much. They don't linger there. Like, Styles gets there, and he hugs Scott, and he hugs Liam, but he's already solving problems. He's already going room to room, trying to find a way to put out Parrish, and they do. And it's like, this is why Styles is so good, because he has the plans, and he's a man of action. Yeah, and I mean, Scott is too, but yeah, exactly. And the way that he just knows what to do is really great to have that element back.
Yeah, it's certainly that the Parrish thing I think was incredibly significant of him kind of doing that and him being to them like, you know, grab him now, like, and it's kind of this level of like, I'm already 5 pages ahead of you, why aren't you catching up with
yes.
me? Which I love about him. And like, it's not, you know, it's not necessarily like he's not being mean to them or anything like about it, but that's He's like, why can't you see what's going on here? Come on, guys, what have you been doing without me? Which is literally exactly what they were saying. They're like, we need to find Style so Style can make the solution.
Yeah.
And so there you go. And I love it. I love that he, you know, as soon as Parrish is put out, he's like, oh, shit, I did the thing again. And that, again, like, Styles is like, buddy, love you, but we're way past that. Like, so, you know, the fact that he can, like, hang around and be like, yeah, Parrish, I love you, is nice. And that was the one that I was going to be like, guys, he says I love you to a very unusual new interest. But no, obviously that's not what it meant. It's just nice that that's the thing that he says to people, apparently.
Yeah.
Poor Parrish.
And they didn't necessarily, like, I mean, Styles has been gone, he finds out, for 3 months, and he, you know, everything has changed. They could linger on that. He could be feeling depressed about, you know, the life that he missed and all that, but they don't. Like, he's just so focused on the problem at hand, and I think a lot of people, when they return, would be disoriented and would be afraid, but he's just like, okay, got a problem to solve. Let's do this. And again, I really liked the way that they handled that.
Yeah, he hits the ground running in like a big way.
Yes.
And
yeah.
I love it.
And all the teamwork in this episode too was really cool to me. And I like that, first of all, Liam figures out that Corey is the one that's allowing the worlds to merge, and he decides that he needs to go into the Wild Hunt in order to stop it. And like, Liam, love him, not necessarily the ideas guy, and he's had some good ones in the past, like, definitely not discounting that. He's had some bad ones too, as they all have, but this is a continuation of him stepping into this leadership role and kind of coming up with solutions himself, whether or not they're good ideas. And nobody thinks this is necessarily a good idea, but in the end, it works out for him.
Yeah, so basically, figures out that Corey is the one that has the power to kind of make things appear in both worlds, so that they must be tapping into his power somehow, which ends up being true. I don't quite understand how. I guess we're just meant to be like, they just do. But, like, we said later when we see Corey, I'm like, okay, so they're using him, but I don't quite understand how, if you know what I mean. Like, I need, for a show that really goes into the science sometimes, I'm like, I need this broken down. I don't really understand what's meant to be happening. They're using his power, but how and what? Like, what exactly are the pieces going on here? Anyway, before then, something very important happens, which is that Theo is in love with Liam. Sorry, he just is now. That's what's happening.
He does. He comes and he rescues him.
Yeah, he's like, I worked so hard to let you get free. What the hell are you doing?
This really confused me, though, to be honest, because how did... Like, I understand that Theo was able to kind of cross into this world because the worlds are merging, but how did he wake himself up? Because...
I don't think he got taken. I don't think he... for me, the way that he was all, like, scratched up and, like... And the fact that Liam is, like, how did you get out or how did you escape? I think that, you know, he... So he let Liam go in the elevator. He battled the Ghost Riders, but he never got taken. And he was still hiding out in the hospital. That was my impression. That might be totally wrong, though.
No, I think you're right. That makes a lot more sense. Because, like, we saw with Peter, like, Peter couldn't wake himself up. He needed an emotional connection with somebody for that person to be able to get to him. So that makes a lot more sense that he didn't get taken. Okay, that's
cool. I think he actually fought and won. Like, and that's why he looks so trashed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or fought and ran away.
Yeah, and that he would, you know... But, and it still allowed Liam to escape, and, then Theo was like, I worked so hard to get you safe, and now you want to go back in? What the hell? So, a.k.a. Theo loves Liam. Hashtag Theo. But...
I also just really liked how Liam took that running jump off the ledge and landed on that horse.
Poor horse.
It was great. It was so great.
Oh,
this show horse. Sometimes.
I'm so glad we got a bit of weird horse comedy in here. It's, you know, if there's going to be a cowboy element, there has to be some weird horse comedy. And who better than Liam to provide, really?
True, true. Do you know how to ride a horse? Not really. Okay, so speaking of Peter and getting people to come out of the train station world, Malia has to call Peter Dad and she has to mean it, which she's none too happy about. Did you catch, by the way, the part where she, like, pretends to punch him in the face to see if he'll flinch?
No, you've written this down and I've seen it twice and I did not notice this, but I believe
it's right after she snaps in his face, and then she does this, like, little thing with her fist, and it's really subtle. I didn't catch it the first time, but she totally tries to punch him in the face to see if he'll flinch. Greatest part of the episode, hands down.
Oh my god, I need it. She's so crazy.
She is. But she has to create this emotional connection in order to wake Peter up, and she doesn't want to, she resists, but she knows what's on the line, and this kind of does prove that she cares about her father, and we see later she goes back for him and helps him fight off the Ghost Riders. And not only that, but as we've seen before, Peter also cares about her, and he, I assume this is how it works, he tries to attack them, and kind of just on his own, nothing happens, but once Malia's life is threatened and he has that emotional connection with her and he goes specifically to protect her, that's when he's able to hit them. So the two of them, their relationship, while it's a little rocky, there's definitely something there that I'm hoping they'll continue to explore.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little confused about the emotional connection wakes people up. Like, I didn't, like, that. Because it's not the same as the remembering. She remembers Peter. She hasn't forgotten him. You know, they're not forgetting people that fast these days, and everything's merging. So I don't understand where this, like, have we seen this happen before? Like, with the emotional...
Well, technically, yeah, because both Scott and Malia remembered Styles, but them remembering him didn't bring him back. It was Lydia's love and Lydia's emotional connection to Styles that was finally able to bring him back.
Yeah, I don't quite know, like, you know, how again, like, how the logic of or this situation is meant to work, how the lore or whatever, the mythology or the rules of the mythology. But regardless, Malia, I liked her little growl, like, when, you know, Lydia was like, come on, you have to do it. Like, the fact that her automatic objection is to growl, like,
yeah,
like an animal is always still hilarious to me.
I love how she's like, dang, sorry, I can't do this.
It was like, oh, when I, sorry, I can't help. Sorry then.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because, you know, I don't know how she feels about him, but she was certainly putting in something to for him in terms of, I think, her lack of care for him may be real, if you know what I mean, or it may not be. But I think that she was able to get through to him because of his care for her, like that he definitely had the care for her, and so that she was able to, like, exploit that, kind of, in order to get him to wake up. I mean, it could be an equally two-sided thing, but she certainly had, you know, I think it was certainly more to do with him, you know, hearing someone that he cared about and, like, responding to that. I also feel a bit bad for Bear Trap Dad still, because she clearly doesn't feel like that. You know, she lives in a house with her father that adopted her and raised her from birth, and, you know, to start calling someone else dad is quite a big deal, so, you know.
It is, but I don't think that necessarily negates her relationship with Bear Trap Dad. Like, yeah. She can have two dads and have two relationships with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think the thing with Malia is, I don't necessarily think that she has no feeling for Peter. I think she wants there to be something meaningful between them, which is different than having something meaningful between them. I think that she wants him to be better, and the more that she sees him trying to be better, the stronger their relationship is going to grow.
Yes, I would probably say so as well. Found it very interesting when we get to the end, like, who the quote-unquote pack is that is actually at Scott's side when he's fighting at the end, so...
Yeah. I know. Oh my god, I love that part so much.
Yeah.
But before we get there, the reason why that all comes together is that they figure out that they need to divert the train that's coming, because if the train goes through Beacon Hills, or if the train stops at Beacon Hills, then basically Mr. Douglas is going to win. So they have to pull the lever that switches the tracks that allows the train to keep on going.
Okay, and, stop. Can we just stop for a second?
Yeah.
Number one, where did they get this information? Parrish. Number two, does this mean they've just condemned some other town?
They would have, this is the thought that I have, they would have if they hadn't stopped the worlds from merging.
Okay, explain that better.
Okay. By diverting the train, it meant that the train didn't stop in Beacon Hills.
Yep.
So it would have gone on to somewhere else. However, because they pulled the plugs out of Corey as soon as they diverted the train, the world stopped merging and the train disappeared.
Okay, but this still happens in other towns without the train being merged into the real world as well. The Ghost Riders still are able to do this in other towns without having them merged into the real world.
Yes, but I think the difference here is that Douglas is bringing the whole world and all of the Ghost Riders into this plane of existence permanently versus the Ghost Riders just kind of having their job to do.
So basically the Ghost Riders will just keep on doing this in other places.
That's my thought, too. It's not like they defeated. It's not like they killed all of the Ghost Riders. They just stopped them from being stuck in Beacon Hills.
Possibly not the best solution, but if they're part of the natural order of things, then I don't know. You know.
Then, yeah, I mean, Yeah. But I really like the lines between Scott and Stiles here when they first see the lever that they can pull to change the direction of the train. And Scott's just like, wait. It can't be that easy. And Stiles goes, yes, it can, Scott. It can be that easy. For once, let's do easy.
I actually really loved that. Like, I was like, I really loved that.
Stiles is so optimistic. And you're like, you know what? Yes, maybe it can be that easy. And it's reaches out.
Not even just optimism. It's kind of like, we deserve this, like, for fuck's sake, kind of thing. Like, so, kind of enjoyed that.
But it's not that easy. And I was actually really shocked because Mr. Douglas takes both Stiles and Scott. He makes them disappear in a puff of green smoke. And I was like, oh my God, did they just get taken again? Like, it was so abrupt, kind of like when Sheriff was taken. And I was like, what does this mean? And I actually panicked for a minute. I was like, how do you go forward from here? But luckily, they just get taken to different parts of Beacon Hills because
apparently
the worlds
are merging.
Apparently,
you just whip them around the world.
Well, no, it's because the worlds are merging. So whereas they might have been taken to the train station before, they kind of just end up, you know, in the locker room or in the hallway because the worlds aren't quite separate anymore. But. Yeah. So this happens a couple of times, but when it really matters, Stiles ends up in the locker room and a Ghost Rider comes after him. And I had such a trauma flashback to Weaponized when that guy held the gun to Stiles' forehead.
Oh, I'm vaguely remembering it. Who was the guy?
Really? Oh my gosh. I'm pretty sure it was the,
That was the guy. When they had the school, like the epidemic, right? The one
Weird right. And remember, Scott's father shot him and the blood splatter ended up in Scott's face.
Scene
was set. I'm so surprised that you didn't like trigger something for you because was set up so almost exactly similar to that scene. And the only difference was Style didn't actually grab the barrel of the gun and put it to his forehead, just sort of stood there. But I have a visceral reaction. It was that teacher that used the disease to make everybody sick.
Gross.
I had such a physical reaction to seeing this. Like, it was horrible. And I was like, oh, I can't believe they're setting it up to look exactly like it did before. I don't know if it was necessarily on purpose, but, I mean, the shots are really similar. So... there's that. But luckily, this time, Lydia saves them both with her powers, and we get the little, like, I didn't say it back, you don't have to exchange, and then they kiss.
Yeah.
And it was very nice.
Yeah, I actually really like this. Not that I'm, like, a big objector or anything to them, like, you know, some people are. But, I really specifically loved this because it was so, number one, the fact that he was like, you didn't have to, is interesting that they both kind of knew where they were at before then, if you know what I mean. Like they, I don't know what they were waiting for before, if they kind of both knew that that's how they felt, but the kiss and more than that, the fact that they sort of collapsed into this kind of hug of like reassurance and stuff like that, it really, and I've said it about Stiles and Lydia before, it really reminds me of like people who are long-term partners. Like that was not a passionate kiss, that was not like a sexual kiss, that was not a kiss of like excitement or, you know, anything like that. Like it wasn't a teen situation, that was like a really, you know, we're 50 years old and I've just found you after a tsunami hit our holiday village, if you know what I mean. Like Well, do you know what I mean? Like, it's not...
I absolutely know what you mean.
Like, and like, the reassurance of, like, the hug as well afterwards, their relationship is so highly developed that they are the kind of teen couple that if they got married the day after graduation, I'd be like, okay, but yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because they're already there, if you know what I mean. Like, it's not, oh, I'm so immature, I don't know what I'm doing. That what their connection and the way that they relate to each other already surpasses that, and they would never break up for like a trivial reason, if you know what I mean, like, oh, it's just not working out, like, after what they've been through. Like, it is so much further than that. It is like they literally have no other option in the world except to be with each other, not just because of what, not like it's forced because of what they've been through, but just because it's kind of just like, this is all that was left. Like, as in, this is the only thing left for them to do. There's nothing else left for them to do, like, to cement their partnership, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it completely makes sense to me. And it feels that way at the end, too, where they kind of just look at each other. And you're right, I think that hug speaks volumes, because it's not like they're kissing to, like, make out and to, like, get to the next level. They kiss, they reassure each other, they're there, and then they hug, and it's this hug that's, like, so desperate, because it's like, finally you're back. Finally this is the way that things should be. And it's, you're right, it's so much deeper than just a typical, like, teen romance. It's, their friendship for several seasons now has been so mature, and finally they're just both kind of at the same place. I mean, I think they were, but I think they weren't necessarily admitting it, and there was a lot of other things going on, but now they're here, and it just makes sense.
Yeah. And I actually think when we get, you know, the end scene at the locker, I think that look was more sexual than the kiss by, like, a lot. Like, they, there was more like, oh, now what? We're going out? Okay, this is going to be fun. I think there was more of that in that look than in the kiss by a long shot. Like, there was nothing like that in the kiss. And so I really was happy with that. I was kind of like, yeah, cool, all right. You've sold this to me. Like, it's six seasons, you've sold this to me. It's let's go. Like, it's fine. Yeah. And the fact that it was after Lydia saved him and, like, you know, all that good stuff.
But speaking of, meanwhile, in the train station, we get the standoff.
I can't believe you just missed a meanwhile back at the ranch opportunity, you know.
Well, just whatever. We get this standoff between Chris and a Ghost Rider, which was completely ridiculous.
Oh, so stupid! And I know that
I
was,
loved
like,
it.
Funny. Like, it was funny.
Yeah.
But I was just like, wow, you guys are really going for this. And it is very funny. Very funny.
I mean, you get, like, the shots of the eyes, you get the shots of the fingers twitching.
The whole
thing was set up. And it's so, like, honestly, it takes you out of it a little bit, because this is not the normal thing that Teen Wolf necessarily does.
No.
And yet it works so well. And I loved, like, every part of this. I love when when Chris gets the gun and he shoots the Ghost Rider and he's like, I gotta get me one of these. And we know, like, he's a weapons expert and he collects things, and I bet he keeps one of them and he's gonna put it in a little display case. And
I like that he for him, how I can kind of rationalize the ridiculousness is that for him, he probably, if he's, you know, a weapons junkie and stuff, and it's more than just the job, he probably appreciates, like, the, you know, the art of it and whatever. He probably grew up, like, as a child, like, you know, watching a Western standoff in a movie and thinking it was, like, the coolest thing ever. And he was like, when am I ever going to get to have a shootout with a cowboy again? Like, you know, like, so it was so dumb, but it was so funny. And
when he finally does get the Ghost Rider, Melissa, that was so hot. And they kiss, and it was just, I mean, it's Macrissa. It happened.
I was actually quite shocked. I was kind of like, oh. So this, I mean, yes, to us, you know, good to know that we weren't just hallucinating this apparent weird new chemistry that had come out of apparently nowhere in this season. And, you know, we've rationalised a lot. We've been like, okay, this makes sense if it was, like, you know, a world where their interpersonal relationships were different due to, you know, Styles not being there and Claudia being there and all of that. Okay, fine. Interpersonal relationships are going to be super different, apparently, you know, given that Melissa and Sheriff would have no memories of ever almost being a thing because, you know, he's already been married the whole time. And so this kind of dynamic makes sense, but then there's been the confusion of, like, well, not that much actually did change and we're just, you know, putting the Band-Aid over the Styles wound. And so the Chris and Melissa thing, again, is it does seem a little odd and a little new if it wasn't due to the influence of the Ghost Rider and Claudia. Regardless, here we are. Apparently this is happening now. And I, you know, as I've said, I really do like this dynamic because to me it is really one of where both new people in new stages of life and neither of us is hanging on to old baggage or affected by each other's old baggage. This is a new moving forward thing for us, whereas Melissa and Sheriff would have been, not in a negative way, but would have had a lot of baggage, would have been like, hey, I remember when your wife was alive, I remember when I arrested your husband for hitting you and stuff. Like, that's a hard thing to have a relationship about. It's a very trustworthy thing to have a friendship about and a relationship about. You're like, yes, we know the history, we know where, you know, the damage comes from or whatever, but it's still a hard thing to, like, adjust to, okay, well, now you're the person that I'm in love with or living with or whatever, with those memories. Whereas if two people are kind of new to each other and come into each other's life after the baggage, it can be really refreshing and like, okay, like, this is not a part of that. And that's kind of how I feel about Macrissa. And I'm okay with it. It is kind of weird. I need to know what Scott's going to say.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting.
It is very odd. Like, when you think about the history, like, if we ever rewatch it again from the start, and are like, oh, him and Melissa ended up together. That's so weird, like, watching Argent at the start and things like that. But I don't know. It's there. I don't know whose idea it was or why it decided to go down, but it did. We got some Macrissas.
We did. But speaking of the sheriff and everything, we also get kind of a conclusion to the Claudia story as well, because Claudia finds Styles and Lydia, and we see her turn into a Ghost Rider. She still very much looks like herself, but she's got that skin and the wrinkliness, and she's a little scary looking. And she tries to choke out Lydia, and then she tries to choke out Styles, and finally Sheriff comes and rescues them, and he shoots her, but nothing happens until Lydia steps up to the plate, and she uses her powers to propel the bullet even faster, I guess, or something, just kind of kickstarts it, and they take out Claudia for good. And this moment is obviously significant because Styles realizes pretty quickly that it's not actually his mother. He doesn't get duped by Claudia's shenanigans, and the sheriff can separate the two of them and realizes also that she's not real, that his son is back, that this is what needs to happen in order for him and Styles to be reunited without any, like, lingering issues between them.
Yeah, and I mean, did this, because they kind of said two things. Lydia both said that it was conjured from his father's pain and that it was conjured by the Ghost Riders. So
mm-hmm.
I'm not quite sure how that works. Is it kind of like the Ghost Riders just, you know, slip it in there and, like, then it, like, it's something that their power allows to exist, if you know what I mean?
I think so. I think that his pain was so great that it sort of, like, the energy around that town, Kanan, allowed the hallucinations to come forth. Mm-hmm. His pain was so strong that it provided the opportunity, and the Wild Hunt kind of provided the solution or something that would, you know, allow him to stay distracted and everything.
Yeah.
So
All well, of your this headings is... in this document, Karen, are... I can't believe that you're not reading them out and, you know, announcing each portion as we get to it.
That seems a little egotistical. I don't know.
Titles.
Yeah, I put them
three,
in...
Your mum is so ugly.
Chapter 4, I got myself a pack, bitches. Okay. I put them in there for you, mostly.
Oh, okay.
But while this is happening, everybody else is fighting off Mr. Douglas and the Ghost Riders. And my God, I loved this scene so much because Mr. Douglas is all like, you of all people, Scott, should know what happens to a lone wolf.
Why and him then, of all people? Like, that doesn't even make any sense, Mr. Douglas.
I think because he's a werewolf. Like, he understands, like, what an omega, like, yeah, what happens is. When you don't have a pack. And, but then Theo steps in and he's all like, he's not alone. He's got a pack. And the fact that Theo is just like, I'm here. Like, I'm here to support. Like, it's not anything about protecting himself or making sure that he survives this, watching on the sidelines. Like, he's there to do a job. And it's definitely a 180 for Theo. I mean, it's been coming for a couple of episodes now, but still really gratifying to see.
Yeah, he definitely, he's the first one to step up and be like, yeah, I am here. And then Malia's like, nope, you're not.
Yeah. So Theo says he's got a pack and Malia's like, and Theo's not in it, but I am. She hates him so much.
And the way that he looks at her when she says that, Theo's like, hey, I've been helping. I want to be in the pack.
Yeah, but objectively, maybe the best line of the episode is when Peter comes in and he's like, I'm not in the pack, but no one likes a Nazi.
Shut up, you're both in the pack, deal with it.
Yeah.
My answer to that, but still.
Yeah. That is my recap title, by the way, No One Likes a Nazi, because, I mean, it's just so appropriate for these days and times.
Oh my god. Yeah, I mean, god, all of Douglas got a bit weird at the end with all of his whole, like, you would have been a great in the Hitler Youth. And I was just like, come on, please. That was very, very weird. I still don't quite understand, like, there's so many things about Douglas that I don't understand. In terms of, when, basically... We'll carry on with the rest of the recap because it sort of comes more into the last point when they do succeed.
Okay. Well, basically, then we get, like, this big, you know, battle scene, which was pretty cool. Lots of flips. Malia does this giant flip. It looked awesome. I loved it.
You loved the flip.
And
the flip in the hallway in the hospital, Scott did, like, a super un- flip.
He was, like, Matrix.
Yeah, and I was just like, oh, good times. Because, I was just like, it was just part of the fight there with, I guess, with Parrish. Or was it with Parrish? I feel like there was bullets involved. Maybe it wasn't with Parrish.
It wasn't with Parrish. It was with two Ghost Riders.
Oh, okay. Well, they're all over this place, aren't they? So, yeah, he was doing some, like, flips off the walls, and I was like, classic Teen Wolf.
Yeah. Derek Hale taught him well. So, okay, back to the battle scene. Scott gets a whip, and he uses it to pull the lever, and the train is diverted. And then he roars, and... the junior pack can hear him and they pull the tubes out of Corey. So it stops the merge from happening. And then when that happens, everybody gets poofed away, but they get poofed away back to where they were taken. And this was really interesting to me because everyone that didn't know what was going on. So it didn't matter if you were human or supernatural. If you were involved in the Ghost Rider business and fighting against them, you remembered what happened. So we see Parrish remembers, we see that the sheriff remembers, but all the other deputies, everyone else, it's just a normal day. It's like nothing happened.
Yeah, and I love that Sheriff and Parrish are still just like, yep, I still work here, I know that I'm evil, but it's not my fault. it is very odd that's what ends up happening.
Mm-hmm.
again, I don't really I still don't really understand the merging of the worlds. I don't really understand, like, how they were using Corey's powers. I know that they were. I just don't understand what they were connecting him to in order to kind of project that.
They were connecting him to that big radio thing, which is how Styles was able to communicate to the real world from the train station world. So it must be something that allows that path to be crossed.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure that it works in some way. It was really gross. It was pretty gross.
Yeah, it was pretty gross. But good on Corey. He was like, he knew his job, and it had to have really sucked, but he did it. So when that happens, the storm disperses, so we're assuming now that, like, the Ghost Riders can leave. They're no longer stuck in the world. But what I also found really interesting, and we've talked about before, in the Ghost Rider mythology that we looked up before the season started, in a lot of cases, the Ghost Riders have a leader, and that leader, like, we were kind of hoping to see maybe who was controlling the Ghost Riders and if that would end up being part of the bigger story in the finale. But Peter says that the Ghost Riders have no leader, so when Mr. Douglas tries to claim that he's the leader, they sort of turn on him and make him a Ghost Rider. So it was a little bit of a departure from what we were expecting.
I don't understand why Douglas thought he was going to be able to control them this time when he couldn't control them the first time and ran away in Nazi Germany.
Controlling them for a while.
Not really. Like, he was just sort of in the middle of it. To me, it just kind of looked like he was running around pretending that this was all his doing when it wasn't.
True. I don't think he ever really gave them, like, specific instructions.
Yeah, he was just kind of, like, standing in the middle, being like, haha, I'm in charge, and they're just like, I'm just gonna keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But it didn't work for him before, so I don't know why he thought it was gonna work for him now. And
arrogance.
We obviously see that he gets made into a Ghost Rider by them, but we don't really see how that would have happened for all of the people that they took, if you know what I mean. Like, you know,
right.
If the idea was to get them all to turn into Ghost Riders, it wasn't something that they really, you know, they weren't moving too quickly on that one. They weren't like, you're a Ghost Rider, you're a Ghost Rider. It was apparently kind of done to Douglas as like a punishment or a shut the hell up tactic.
Yeah. Yeah. Which worked in the end.
Yeah.
So that kind of takes care of those storylines. And, I mean, this did wrap up fairly nicely, but also we know the Ghost Riders aren't gone. Like, it's not like they all died, they all exploded. They just went back to where they came from. So the assumption is things are back to normal now. The Wild Hunt is no longer stuck in Beacon Hills. Kind of sucks because the Ghost Riders are still going to take people, but maybe it is a natural order kind of thing.
Yeah, it kind of does not seem like a solution to the problem. I really feel like it's not.
At least they saved Beacon Hills. They did fix that problem. But going into Last Day Ever, which is wrapping up the episode, Styles is super disappointed. It's so anticlimactic, he says. And he goes, this can't be it. And I just didn't know if this was, like, breaking the fourth wall a little bit or, like, what was going on here, but it seemed very pointed.
Yeah, you think that was pointed. I feel like what was pointed is that the rest of them left the room and he was sitting there alone in the room and then they turned the lights off. Like, if anything tells me that he's not going to be in the next half, it was that. That was That was a theater exit. That was the lights going down on the character.
Okay, I literally just had a pain in my chest.
I'm sorry.
Oh.
Maybe that won't. I feel like he's got to at least be in the series finale, but I don't know.
I hope so. I mean, at the very least, like, it's funny because going into the season, I was like, no, like, Styles has to be there. And then I was like, well, okay, as long as he's there, like, a couple episodes, like, half the season, I'll be happy. And then we get, like, three episodes, and I'm like, okay, like, that was good, but he's got to be in the second half. And now I'm like, well, if he's at least in the finale, you know, you kind of keep,
you're like dialing down your expectations.
Negotiating.
Yeah.
keep negotiating with myself.
Yeah, I don't know. It's quite stressful. yeah. But it might be that it is what it is, or that they're not 100% sure, so they were kind of just taking precautions to give him an exit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. But, I mean, I will say that I really enjoyed the end of this episode. So we get the look between Styles and Lydia. You know, he says everything's changed, which is very true, especially when it comes to them. And then we kind of go through the characters and we learn that, like, Malia still has summer school and they all still have to graduate. My question is, since Styles is going to D.C., does that mean graduation already happened and when we come back in 6B, it's going to be, like, just summertime?
That's kind of what I thought. I don't know how soon, like, a graduation happens after the last day of classes in America.
Usually, I think it's, like, oh, God, it's been a while. A couple of weeks?
It's really confusing, honestly, like, because ours is so different. Ours is, like, you finish all your normal classes, then you actually sit the state-mandated final exams that are the university entrance exams, and that's, like, a whole term of no classes, of just the exams, and then the graduation is after that. Like, it's, you know, after you prove that you've actually graduated, like, and passed the exams. So it's really confusing. Yeah. Like, and I've said before that our university entrance, we do not get that until way after we finish school because it depends on those final exams. It's not something that you know within your final year of school. I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. Did you take this to mean, like, that he was going to DC that day, you know, like, or something like that?
I mean, I guess I kind of assumed because he was giving up the Jeep, like, he didn't need the Jeep because Lydia was taking him to DC, so why give Scott the Jeep right then and there if he wasn't ready to leave?
I don't know. I'm very confused, like, honestly. So there's a lot, you know, with this final ending scene is definitely, like, something that I thought would kind of, you know, be at the end of the whole series, you know. And I don't know if it's that we are, you know, having skipped over graduation, or if it is that you know, this is the end of the summer, or what's going on? Like, no idea.
Yeah, I think we're going to have to wait until we hear anything about the timeline.
Can't believe we missed out on their, jump, like, summer of happiness together, though.
Yeah.
It is the end of the summer.
Seriously.
All those ice cream trips.
To the beach. Oh, man.
God. But yeah, because it kind of still looked like they were in the school parking lot. Like, it looked like they were looking around the school.
Yeah, yeah, they definitely were. So that's interesting.
It's very confusing.
But this was sort of, honestly, as much as I hate to admit it, you know, it does kind of feel like a Styles send-off, because Styles gives Scott the Jeep, he gives him a roll of duct tape, which is very funny, and he gives him... He said, I figured you should have all the copies I secretly made to his house, to his room.
Did he say secretly? I thought he said that, because I thought he actually said, I figured you should have all the copies I appear to have made, like, in a kind of, like, whoops way. Like, I couldn't quite hear it properly, but I
think it was secretly made.
Oh, well, I'm gonna check, because, yeah, I found that hysterically, like, the less of an admittance of guilt and more of how did that happen?
Yeah.
And the bat, the stupid bat.
Oh my God, giving it to Mason, like, literally passing the baton to Mason.
Ceremonial bat.
Yeah. Bat, and Mason's passing. Just like, I don't play baseball.
And he's like, oh yeah, neither do I. Like, you
know. Yeah.
Speaking of Mason, I loved the little tiny bit with him and Melissa, you know, when they're healing Corey, and him being like, oh, yeah, duh, this, did you need to know anything? And it's like, oh, how were you when we were trying to translate this, you know, like, horrible Celtic,
Chris was,
like,
on his deathbed.
Yeah, it's so, so cute.
Oh, I love him. He's so smart.
Yeah.
Too smart for his own good. And then Styles tells Liam, you know, that his best friend will be the one to always save his ass, and Scott's all like, not always. And he's like, yeah, but most of the time. And Liam being the alpha in training, but he can't be because he's not going to kill another alpha. And that dynamic I'm really interested in because, okay, you can be, like, he can be the leader of his group. He is the leader of Hayden, Mason, and Corey, and they respect him. And when Styles or when Scott leaves, he can be the actual leader of the pack. But, and I think, like, you can gain strength from that, but I don't know if you can necessarily gain the supernatural strength from that because he's not technically going to be an alpha still.
Nah, he's just like a second unit director. Like, he's not, he's not going to be an alpha. And but I find that interesting, you know, the whole, like, then I'd have to kill an alpha and blah, blah, blah. I'm, you know, obviously Scott is a true alpha. The fact that Douglas is like, I can have a true alpha on my side. I'm like, you realize that true alphas come from, like, an
the most purest
character. Like, so why do you think that he's going to, like, be on your side? Like, how
I had the same exact thought.
But I'm kind of, you know, and obviously we know with, like, people like the Hales, they have, like, kind of an alpha of the pack, and it's, like, hereditary. Like, you know, Talia was killed. Therefore, Laura became the alpha, not because Laura killed an alpha, but because Talia was killed. She was the next in line. It was always my impression of that, if you know what I mean. That she would...
True.
Within the family pack, you can inherit it, and I wonder how that works in, like, a motley, non-hereditary pack like Scott's. Like, if Scott died, would one of them automatically... And not was not killed by another werewolf, if he just died somehow. Because it's not like Kate became an alpha by setting the Hale fire, you know? Like,
right, yeah. You
know, or anything like that.
I think Liam would inherit it if Scott had died. And I think maybe that is sort of how it can work in this way, that, like, he, you know, maybe they need another ceremony and he Scott actually passes that title onto him temporarily while he's away. And he could still act kind of like an alpha. I don't know if you necessarily have the red eyes, but maybe it would be a supernatural kind of strengthening thing for them.
I don't know. Because they definitely have a hereditary, like, yes, you, I died, and you are there. At least that's what they set up with the Hales, and they have not revisited that, but...
Yeah. So Lydia's helping Styles move into George Washington, and he's going into a pre-FBI program thanks to Scott's dad. I think this is pretty cool, though, because we know that Styles, like, this is what Styles wanted to do. He wanted to be, like, his father. He wanted to help people. And it's just, it's nice that this is the direction, you know, that he's going in. And even if we don't see Styles again, it's nice to know that, like, he's moving on in his life in a positive way. And, you know, this kind of gives you something to think about and speculate about as the series ends.
It's actually cooler than I expected in terms of, like, his, you know, when he was like, oh, I want to be a cop. Not that there's anything wrong with, like, what Sheriff does and stuff like that. But the fact that he is becoming not just a detective, but, like, going into that level of, like, pre-FBI... and then going to end up as, like, you know, a detective on that level is really, really cool and much better fit for him than I expect. I never once gave a thought to Ralph McCall, you know, having a hookup there and wanting to help Styles, but that sure is an interesting factor to play in. And it, you know, again, it, like, creates this whole world of, like, well, how much do they actually talk to Scott's dad? And, like, Scott's dad clearly has some respect for Styles there and stuff like that. So that's an interesting one. And then, I don't know the relevance of UC Davis. I know the UC chain of schools is good. But the fact that they're like, how did you even get into that college to each other? I thought was a bit
like, Scott's been working hard, and I think that, you know, really paid off, and it's cool, and hopefully we get to see him maybe, you know, starting to gear up for becoming a veterinarian, and we know that Lydia is going into MIT as a junior because she's super smart, and it's just this, it is that sort of, like, dispersal of the group, everyone kind of heading off in their own direction, and it's sad, but at the same time, like, they're fulfilling their potentials, they're chasing their dreams, it's a bittersweetness, I think.
Yeah, I have two things. I definitely started Google mapping the colleges in terms of, like, okay, so how far a drive of that? Even Lydia and Stiles, like, D.C. to Washington. Oh, sorry, D.C. to Boston. Oh, it's Cambridge, not Boston. Is still, like, 7 hours drive. Like, and they're both, like, East Coast. Like, that's, like, kind of, like, the quote-unquote, like, tri-state area. Well, not the tri-state, but, like, that to me, in my head, I'm like, those places are close together. Like, Boston, New York, like, DC, yeah. Like, they're all, like, that kind of, like, East Coast hub, and that's still 7 hours drive, like, apart yep. from each other. Secondly, how do you feel about Lydia going to Tony Stark's college?
Amazing.
You're like, I gave that no thought until the second.
Yeah, no, none at all. But I'm so happy for her, and I'm, you know, we learned a long time ago, like, what she was interested in, the fact that she's interested in mathematics and science, like, that is just, it's really cool, and I'm glad that they're following up on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I'm just having all these weird imaginings now of, like, the people involved with the different colleges, like, for example, Lydia being, like, in the audience if, like, Tony Stark gave a commencement speech, or, like, Stiles running into, like, Will Graham and Hannibal Lecter if he ends up going into the FBI program or something like that. Like, even though they're, like, off in Argentina being gay married now. So you mess with the timings a little bit. I'm thinking about other fictional FBI things and other fictional MIT things of being like, wow.
Yeah.
So many it's pretty cool. potentials.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm like, oh, spinoff series, Lydia MIT being a banshee and having to deal with her classes and all of that stuff. Mm. Getting surprise visits from Stiles. Mm. It'd be great. But one of the cool things that they left off here was Stiles kind of looks around and says, they still need us, meaning Beacon Hills, you know, the school, the people that live there. And Scott says, they'll always need us. And there's more to this quote, but, like, that in and of itself kind of mirrors the beginning of this season.
Yeah, yeah.
And it, you know, they will always need them, but that doesn't mean that they can't move on with their lives. And it doesn't mean that other people won't be there to help them as well. So I thought it was a really cool kind of full circle moment, and also a, like, yes, they need us, but we can't put our lives on hold. We've done so much for everybody already that we kind of need to live too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, of course, we get the, and I need you, you know that. I need you too. I'm going to miss you moment and the back and forth. And it was, and they followed up with a joke because Stiles lost his driver's license. But, I mean, the relationship that these two guys have is so emotional, so sentimental. It could be funny. It could be something to laugh at, but it's not. I mean, they've been through so much together, and if anything's proved what a close friendship they have, it's this season, you know? It's realizing what you have once it's gone and them coming back together and everything. It was really well done.
Yeah, I felt, like, okay about it, you know, like, again, like, this is the conversation I expected to see in the series finale, basically. Yeah. So I'm a little bit confused as to what happens in the show now, like, what's going to be the next season of the show.
I'm going to be perfectly honest and say that I'm a little disappointed that this isn't the series finale, because it was, for me, not everybody's going to love it. For me, this was literally the perfect ending. I even liked it when, you know, the sheriff comes onto the radio, the scanner, and says there's a body in the woods, and they flip it off, they ignore it, they keep driving, they drive off into the sunset, into the lens flare. It's such a full circle moment. I mean, literally, from the pilot, it mirrors it so perfectly.
Yeah, the sheriff, you know, the radio thing and then the kind of driving off into the sunset, those are the beats that you put into a series finale. Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly what you would do. So I do think that it's definitely meant to signify that this is the end of the normal show, and that the next season is going to be, like, a bit weird. Like, that it's going to be, like, either a time jump, or that it's going to be, like, something odd, like, you know, like, setting setting, you know, that it's going to focus on really different things, so it's like a weird follow-up, because I think this was meant to be the end of the normal show.
I'm kind of mad about it. Like, not mad in, like, I'm going to go, you know, destroy people on Twitter mad, but, like, I'm upset because it was so perfect. It was so good. And I want this, if this was the last moment for Teen Wolf ever, I would have cried a lot more, first of all.
Yeah.
But it would have been such a positive series finale. And not that I don't have faith that, you know, whatever comes next is going to be good, because, like I said, this season so far, I think it's my favorite. It's just, it's been so solid for me. But whatever comes next could change the way that I view this, and I don't want it to, and I'm worried, and I want the ending to feel like an ending, and I want it to be, you know, with Scott and Stiles, like, ending the show on Scott and Stiles.
Yeah, and I kind
of can't get any better than that.
I kind of hope that they will, but I don't know. I don't know at what point they knew that the show was ending in the writing period. Like, you know, I don't know if, you know, we know that, like, you know, when they were producing season six, they kind of, you know, they announced it, obviously, at Comic-Con. We know that not too many people knew about it before that, even of the cast and crew. And so I don't know at what point they were writing this ending. I'm pretty sure that they were not finished writing the season when we saw them at Comic-Con, so they may have written this knowing that the end was coming. Possibly they just knew that Dylan's end was coming, and so they were writing a series finale for Stiles. But
yeah.
And they were like, okay, so we know that we're losing him, so we're going to write that ending that we always wanted to do at the end of the show, and then do something weird after that. Like, but I don't know. I really hope that the next season, I would take, like, a focus episode on each character. Like, I would take a musical. No, I would not take a musical episode. That's that is a lie. But I would take, like, you know, like, I would. What I want for the next season is for every episode to have a cameo of someone, and for it to be a really naturalistic, well-written exploration of that character, basically, in a way that's not like, where have you been, in a way that's everyone is dropped in assuming that they know each other. Maybe not with the junior pack, but like with Scott and, say, Isaac, Jackson, whatever, Derek, and Cora, and all the people to come in and talk. That gives us the impression that everyone has known everyone off screen, if you know what I mean, or known what's going on with everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I kind of want 6B to be like the limited series reunion thing that, like, everybody's doing right now. It's just happening, like, immediately after the show ends. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's just like happening immediately after the show ends, instead of like
10 years. 5 years. Yeah. And, like, you know, everyone's there. But yeah, there's lots of untold stories, and I would really like to see some people return, especially if there's not going to be Stiles. I would really like to see some of the people that we've loved and lost to return.
Yes. And I just want to say really quickly, though, that in our next episode, so I had an interview with Jeff, and we talked about some things. I asked him some pretty pointed questions, and his answers were the best that he could give me, but they'll definitely, like, give us some things to talk about. So I'd like to go through the interview and kind of discuss what we learned, and then I'd also like to do some speculation for 6B. So next time we come back, whether it's in a week or two, I'm not sure what our schedule is going to be like yet, we will do some 6B speculation with some of the information that we learned.
And is it announced that they're returning in the summer? Like, that was in the press release. Does that mean we're meant to say that?
Yeah, it's totally fine. I don't know if they've necessarily, like, officially announced it. They'll probably put it up on Twitter after the episode airs. Spoiler, we're recording this ahead of time.
The material for the episode that was provided to us was saying, you know, that 6B will return in the summer. So that's quite, you know, it's February the 1st. So, in my country it is. Anyway. Yeah, it's February the 1st. Is it February the 1st for you? No, it's 31st of January for you.
Yep.
That's quite a while. So I'm curious. My big thing is, are they going to do a last Comic-Con panel? Like, knowing that this is... Because last time, we didn't know it was the end. And there was a really weird vibe. And then... But I've spoken about it before. I went to, like, the Hannibal panel at Comic-Con in 2015 when they knew it was ending. Like, it was midway through season 3 and they knew it was ending. But it was so loving and celebratory and gorgeous because of that. And I'm wondering if they'll do a final Teen Wolf panel. Like, if it's airing in the middle of the... If it's airing over the summer and it's 10 episodes, it's likely that, like, in mid-July, the season won't be finished. And so will they do, like, a Teen Wolf celebration final thing at Comic-Con? Is what I want to know. Or are they just going to be like, yeah, we're just going to, like, push that to the side and not focus on it? I don't know. I really want these answers.
Either. Yeah.
Someone tell me. Just tell me.
Either way,
no.
It is interesting that, like, they expected to do the 20-episode run straight through, no break. Now they're taking a break. What does this mean in terms of filming schedules? Will this allow somebody like Dylan to come back? Is it allowing other people to make cameos? Are they just trying to make it last longer? Like, is MTV just trying to prolong it? Don't know. But it's certainly a thing that is drying out Teen Wolf, which I'm not super upset about because I'm still trying to come to
It's a very
terms.
Slow death. I thought it would be faster.
But at least we have some, you know, we've got a hiatus now. We've got a couple of months and we'll try to figure out what we're going to talk about. But we know what we're going to do next episode and, you know, fly by the seat of our pants for the rest is what we usually do. But that pretty much wraps up this episode, though.
Yeah.
So I guess until next week, we'll see you guys later.
Yeah. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
Okay, I have to run and put on pants. So
yes, put on pants, then run.
Okay.